Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So glad that you joined us on our Worldview Wednesday edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. Got a good show, I think, lined up for you today. We're going to talk first with Susan Olasky about her cover story about international adoption. I'll explain that to you in just a moment. November is Adoption Month, National Adoption Month, and so we're focusing on that particular issue. It's something that's near and dear to my heart as well. My daughter just recently adopted, just last week, came home with a child international through an international adoption, and so she just brought her home, and so we're so grateful to God for that entire process and the way that it went and the way that it's going now. So praise the Lord. But there's something happening here that I want to tell you about in just a second. Second half of the program today, we're going to talk about a little bit about Obamacare, but from a little bit different perspective than you may have heard in the news recently. And what I'm talking about is that there's been another caught on tape incident that has happened, and this time with the Obamacare navigators. The navigators, once again, James O'Keefe has gone undercover. He's gone into some of these navigator sites, and he has actually got the navigators saying a few things on tape that I think you're going to be pretty surprised about, where they're encouraging people to lie to the federal government and do whatever they need to do to get signed up on this this program. So we'll talk about that. James O'Keefe is going to join us at the bottom of the hour to talk about that latest caught on tape incident. And so there's where we're going in the broadcast today. First up is Susan Olasky, as I mentioned on that article. This is the cover story of the most recent edition of World Magazine. It's entitled Probing International Adoption, The Upside, Downsides, and Blindsides. And the story begins this way. It says international adoption is under assault. In 2013, a rash of negative stories with sensational titles such as, quote, Evangelicals and the Fake Orphan Racket, unquote, and Orphan Fever, the Evangelicals Movement's Adoption Obsession, the Evangelical Movement's Adoption Obsession, unquote, have made their way into print. And Catherine Joyce's The Child Catchers has spawned articles about child trafficking and corruption. The attacks are propelling questions. What's in the best interest of the children? How important is cultural continuity? Should children have the right to a stable family, even if the family is in a different country? And do children belong to the state? Those are some of the questions that these types of articles are spawning. Well, Susan Olasky takes this issue head on in this article and gives us a lot of good information to make some really good determinations on how this should be looked at and how we should go forward here on this, certainly this important issue. Susan, welcome to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
It's good to be with you, Kevin.
Susan, you start off the article after the point that I mentioned there by giving some statistics to put things in perspective, specifically statistics that tell about how many adoptions, international adoption or inter-country adoption, I think is the way it's actually stated, but inter-country adoptions, how many there were years ago compared to where we were in 2012. Why don't we start there, and then we can move on through the article that way.
Well, in 2012, there were fewer than 9,000 in the United States. Just a few years earlier, the number was closer to 24,000. So that shows you how steep the decline has been over a pretty short period.
And is that decline, is there a direct correlation to some of these negative stories that have been, so prominently displayed in the news?
Well, these stories, of course, coming out this year, didn't affect the decline, but these stories reflect the negative coverage that international adoption has received over the past decade. Stories have focused on the possibilities of fraud, that some children are truly orphans, that when you introduce huge sums of money into the adoption, into foreign countries, that much money may offer perverse incentives for parents, poor parents, to give up their children rather than to raise them in poverty. And so we have had reporters going to places like Ethiopia and Guatemala and Cambodia and finding horror stories. And then that embarrasses countries like Ethiopia and Guatemala and Cambodia. They tend to put brakes on the number of children available for adoption. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that slowdown is a good thing because it causes the country to make sure their procedures are good and solid. But sometimes the charges aren't actually – they're charges. They make people suspicious, but there's not actually fire. It's just smoke. Mm. Over the past decade, what we've had are various countries – tightening their rules or getting rid of their adoption programs altogether. And we've had the U.S. Government also tightening rules.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned in the story that obviously we're concerned about any cases of abuse or fraud or anything coming into that process that is unethical and unbiblical from a Christian perspective. So obviously we're concerned about that, but you mentioned that there's a figure that's being forgotten here, and that's the figure about all of the orphans that don't get adopted, and many of which end up dying. Tell us a little bit about that figure.
Well, I think any reporter understands that if you can make a character, if you can make someone in your story come alive, you are going to have the sympathy of the reader. And so the stories that we read in newspapers tend to be children who were abused by their adoptive parents or children who were, the very famous case of the mother from Tennessee who put her adopted Russian child on a plane and sent him back alone to Russia because they didn't bond. And all of those stories, they break our hearts, but the stories that we don't hear are the stories that happen, the hundreds of thousands of anonymous orphans who die in sub-Saharan Africa every year. There's no way we would hear their stories. They're, they live in remote villages. They're at birth, they may be born to parents who are sick. They're malnourished. They die of things like malaria, TB, just lack of proper nutrition, and it happens all the time.
Mm.
Now, not all of those children would ever be available for adoption, but there is, when we're thinking about this whole problem, there is this missing person that we're not hearing about, the forgotten child, and that's the child who is an orphan, would be eligible for adoption, and is resigned to, just a very poor life that we wouldn't want any for any of our own children.
Yeah, that's just one area that you note, and the figure here in the article is 300,000 orphans under age five who die each year in sub-Saharan Africa. So one area where children could be helped by, in this particular case, we're focusing on the United States, but in the United States where there are parents that are willing, not just willing, but it's expensive, it's exhausting, the process is, to go through that process. They're willing to do this in order to bring a child into their home, and yet we're finding that 300,000 in just that one area per year are perishing while others are willing to take them in and give them the help that they need. You do give a couple stories in your article then about some of these cases. Why don't you tell us one or two of the stories here that you list in your article about families that you know of that they weren't able to adopt the children in time?
Right. The two different families. One, the Hoffman family, were in the process. They had been notified of a baby, Brighton Asher. And before they could complete the adoption, he got very sick. They didn't at first hear about that he was in the hospital, but afterwards the orphanage contacted them, and he was in and out of the hospital. But he ended up dying and had spent most of his days, he was very young, but most of his days in the hospital, actually. And so they were never able to complete that adoption and bring him home. And the other family, the Best family of California, their child, Cruz Bernal Besk, was born. He had, I think it was pneumonia and TB and some kind of severe dietary or malnutrition that has a strange name. And he had been sick, got better, and that's when they received notice that they had been matched with him. They actually had a friend in Ethiopia who was able to videotape him, and he seemed so lively. But the next day, you know, he went back to the hospital, and he died. He was just 2 years old. Mm. And neither of those cases, you know, the orphanages didn't do anything wrong. And, you know, it wasn't that their case got held up in court or anything. It's just that here are children from a very poor part of Ethiopia, malnourished, mm-hmm. and unable to regain the strength they needed to survive long enough to come to America. And the things that they had, the sicknesses that they had, could have been easily treated here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that in the couple of cases that I've now been very much familiar with, my own personal case there is I spoke about my daughter and her husband adopting just, like I said, the child just came home here to the States just last week. She specifically adopted a special needs child. And I have a really good friend. I'm not at liberty to share the details of it, but I have a really good friend who is currently right now in China, and they specifically went after to adopt a child who had heart defects because their own child had gone through that, and they just fell in love with these children that had these types of like a congenital heart disease that needed to be operated on, you know, at a very young age, and so they're on their way back now from China with a child as well. And so, you know, boy, these are great stories of people. You know, we're talking a lot of times. I did a program about Stuck. It's a movie, a documentary about the international adoption process and how rigid it really is. In fact, it's, for the folks here locally, It's going to be shown again this Friday night at 7 o'clock at Subaru Road Baptist Church. 7 o'clock Friday night, Subaru Road Baptist Church. And if you need any further details on that, you can shoot me an email, kttradio@gmail.com, or you can contact the church over there at Subaru Road Baptist Church. But in that film, it said that the average time and cost was around $30,000 and close to 3 years from the time that you begin the process all the way until you, you know, actually have the child in your home. And they were just the whole concept behind that was trying to improve this process, because what they were noting was the deterioration of the health of the child during that 3 year waiting period. And the exorbitant cost was prohibitive of people being able to get involved in that adoption process because of the staggering amount of cost. And so when we showed it at a local church, that Stuck documentary as well, a couple of people came up to me and they had adopted two children from China, and both of those were $50,000 was the cost to be able to go there and adopt those children. So, you know, your story brings this out. There's parents who are willing at tremendous personal cost, and you know, to put themselves into this process and go home inspections and, you know, going through your life and looking at making sure that you're fit parents, which is right. But and yet these children are out there dying. So these stories are really hurting this process, right?
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, as Christians, we want an ethical adoption system. Mm-hmm. And we understand that if you know, a lot of money can create perverse incentives, but I think many of the critics are hostile to Christianity, and so it's not as though they're saying, yes, adoption's a good thing, let's clean it up. They're saying, we don't really like the idea of white evangelical parents adopting African children. We don't like the idea that when you adopt children, you are also going to teach them the gospel. We think you exaggerate the number of children, and you've got this frenzy where people who are unprepared are taking in children, and, you know, they have very suspicious minds about what Christians intend for these children and what would motivate Christians to do this. And since that's the attitude they bring to their reporting, then the stories have this kind of warped feel to them, you know, that Christians are breaking rules in order to pay parents. And so the stories don't accurately reflect the heart, I think, of most Christian parents, that they want to adopt those children who are truly in need,
mm-hmm.
who don't have parents. And I think, you know, in talking to some of the experts who are aware of the big picture, because I think most of us as lay people, you know, we don't know whether it's an ethical agency or whether we count on experts to assure us that everything is being done appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
And Chuck Johnson from the National Council for Adoption has said that when they do detailed studies of adoptions from, say, Ethiopia, they find that the children that they look at, you know, with a magnifying glass, that all of those children are intended for adoption. There isn't fraud. And so I think you have the accusation of fraud, which makes us all nervous. But when you actually examine what's going on, you're not finding widespread fraud.
Mm-hmm.
That should be reassuring for parents. And I think we also need to ask hard questions when we work with an agency, you know, demand from them that they cross the T's and dot the I's, because we don't want to cut corners.
Exactly. Yeah, we don't want that at all. Somebody had sent me a link to one of these stories that you were talking about. It the title says this, A Tragic Death of Ethiopian Adoptee Hannah Williams, and How Could It Happen Again, and How It Could Happen Again. And I read through it, and obviously these things are horrific, you know, when they happen. And people are involved, and people are sinners. And so there is going to be cases where there is going to be abuse. But my perspective of that particular article was that, as you pointed out, it was a hit piece against fundamentalism. And it brought out items in there that weren't essential to the telling of the story of the what happened to this adopted little girl. They kind of went out of their way to talk about that she was unclothed when they found her, and that the parents were more concerned about the fact that she was naked because of their fundamentalist beliefs, that they had a, you know, ethical aversion to this, and therefore they were more concerned about their fundamentalist rules and not that much concerned about the girl. And, you know, it just, to me, it seemed like a hit piece. But somebody asked me to ask this question then. It's the person that sent me that article. He said this, how do we maintain accountability and protection of the child in instances of adoption without interfering with the biblical scope of parenthood? So through thinking about this and writing about it for World Magazine, how would you answer that question?
Well, I think one thing I would encourage any person considering adoption to work with an agency. I understand some countries don't use agencies, but if you're adopting domestically, you can do a private adoption through an attorney. But I think you probably don't get the counseling that you would get with an agency. And I think agencies need to make sure that they are vetting families, because there are some families that aren't appropriate for some children. Mm-hmm. If you have a very rigid view of, you know, there's only one method of discipline, then perhaps you're not going to be the best family for a child who you're thinking of adopting through foster care, who may have had a lot of abuse of one kind or another, mm-hmm. or at least a lot of trauma. Maybe a different kind of family would be a better match. And so, you know, I put a lot of the responsibility on agencies, on the people who are approving families. But I think Christian families need to, you know, take a sober assessment of themselves. You know, why are you doing this? What are your motives? Are you going to be willing to parent whatever child God gives you, even if that child doesn't measure up to your expectations? You know, are you doing this for yourself? Or because, you know, everyone in your church is doing it, or do you really feel called to offer a home to a child who wouldn't otherwise have a home? And that was one of the reasons I did the story about the Edwards family, because when I read the series on Reuters about families looking to rehome adopted children that, you know, where the adoption was not going well, mm-hmm. I thought, no way, that can't, Christians would never do that. And so I called Ramona Edwards, who I'd interviewed several years ago, and I knew she had adopted older kids, and I asked her if she'd read the articles, and she hadn't, so she read them, and then we got back in touch, and she said that she had actually visited those kinds of message boards, and specifically Christian versions of them, and that many, many Christian parents were just like, I'm just not bonding with this child. I'm just not. And sometimes she said, you know, the child came from a background, the agencies or the files were incomplete. They didn't talk about the severe abuse the child had suffered, and therefore the child was actually dangerous. But she said many more cases were, I'm just not bonding. It's just not working.
Mm-hmm.
And looking desperately for someone to take the children away from them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, how can that be that if you commit, it's like a marriage, you make a vow, mm-hmm. you make a vow to be a parent. How can you just say, well, I'm tired of that vow?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I wanted to focus on the two children that the Edwards family had adopted from a failed adoption, and mm-hmm. then some of the difficulties in adopting older children. You know, it's not always going to be a happy story.
Right. There's a lot of attachment issues, especially where we're talking about older children. And I think that the bottom line is, you know, we need to do everything reasonable to try to make the assessment of the child and the expectation of the parent completely above board and make sure that they're a good match. Like, for instance, you were talking about some of those attachment issues. I think that sometimes if there were other children in the home and you were taking someone that had severe attachment issues via abuse, that it may be better for them to go to parents that don't have other children so that they could concentrate directly on that one child and not be concerned about the safety of other children in the home. So there are solutions to this, and I'm just concerned that when people hear of the issues that it'll in some way damage people's interest in adoption. I think it's a good thing for us to have an interest in adoption, and I think that there are many, many more resources now than there were just a few years ago. I would recommend to some of the listening audience, Reese's Rainbow is a good resource as far as I know from what I've talked to them about or found out about their organization. And, of course, Together for Adoption, Dan Kruver is right here in the Greenville area, and they've helped out a number of folks to think through these issues that we're talking about with Susan Olasky, and I would recommend them as a great resource as well if it's something you're interested in. Susan, unfortunately, our time is gone. It's fascinating. You did an excellent job of putting together this information for us, and thank you so much for writing about this, and thank you for just World Magazine and the great job you guys are doing on a number of different fronts.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. That was Susan Olasky with World Magazine. You can check out her article that we were talking about. It's the cover story of the most recent edition of World Magazine. It's called Probing International Adoption, the Upsides, Downsides, and Blindsides of It. She takes a pretty thorough look at it in that issue. We only talked about one article. There's a couple other associated articles as well. We're going to switch gears in the second half of the program today. We'll be joined by James O'Keefe in just a couple moments. James is going to talk to us about his most recent undercover video operation that he did. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.